Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Thus, the devotee who worships me, the all-pervading Lord of the universe, in unflinching devotional service, gives up all aspirations to be promoted to heavenly planets or to become happy in this world with wealth, children, cattle, home, or anything in relationship with the body. I take him to the other side of birth and death. Please repeat word to word translation. Imam. This. Lokam. World. Tatha. Accordingly. Eva. Certainly. Amum. That world. Atmanam. The subtle body. Ubhaya. In both. Ainam. Traveling. Atmanam. The body. Anu. In relationship with. Ye. Those who. Also. Iha. In this world. Ye. That which. Raya. Wealth. Pashava. Cattle. Griha. Houses. Vishritya. Having given up. Sarvan. All. Anyan. Adhar. Cha. And. Mam. Me. Evam. Thus. Vishvitaha. Vishvita Mukham. The all-pervading Lord of the universe. Bhajanti. They worship. Ananyaya. Unflinching. Bhaktya. By devotional service. Tan. Them. Nityu. Of death. Ati Paraye. I take to the other side. The purport is very long, so we'll just read the first paragraph. Unflinching devotional service, as described in these two verses, means engaging oneself in full Krishna consciousness or devotional service, accepting the Supreme Lord as all in all. Since the Supreme Lord is all-inclusive, if anyone worships Him with unflinching faith, he has automatically achieved all other opulences and performed all other duties. The Lord promises herein that He takes His devotee to the other side of birth and death. Lord Chaitanya therefore recommended that one who aspires to go beyond birth and death should have no material possessions. This means that one should not try to be happy in this world or to be promoted to the heavenly world, nor should he try for material wealth, children, houses or cattle. Om Ajnanati Nirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurud Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahiyam Dadati Sva Padantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhyaiva cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita instructions of Kapila Dev to his mother Devahuti. The instructions are continuing. This chapter is entitled The Glories of Devotional Service. So in the middle of this chapter, Devahuti asks Kapila Dev certain questions that I'm a lady, how can I execute the processes which you are describing? And then it describes, Prabhupada says that taking compassion on his mother, Kapila Muni then started describing what is known as Sankhya Yoga, or another name for Sankhya Yoga like Vedavyas Priya Maharaj was saying is Bhakti Yoga. So a few verses ago, Kapila Dev has started describing the glories of devotional service or Sankhya Yoga. And the chapter is about to end soon. In a few verses, the chapter will end. And then Kapila Dev Muni will move on to actually describing the fundamental principles of material nature. So that time it becomes a little more technical. He's describing how the world is created, all those technical aspects of the creation Kapila Dev will describe. But this chapter is very important for devotees because here Kapila Dev is giving very pertinent instructions for practicing devotees like all of us. Like in today's verse, if we see, he's actually making a personal claim. He's saying that whichever devotees actually surrender unto me and have unflinching devotional service, perform unflinching devotional service unto me, I will take them beyond this world of birth and death, this world of Kuntha, and I will take them to Vaikuntha, the place where there is no birth and death and the place where there is absolutely no miseries. So that is a personal claim which Kapila Dev is making in this particular verse. But what is the stake that he is asking for taking devotees to the beyond the world of birth and death? So as it is described in the translation, and Prabhupada gives elaborate purport to this, he is saying that those devotees who worship me with unflinching devotional service, giving up all aspirations to be promoted to heavenly planets or to become happy within this world, and who have completely surrendered unto me, to those devotees I grant them the boon that I will take them beyond this world of birth and death. And in the first paragraph which we just read, he is describing that unflinching faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what does it mean by unflinching faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Unflinching faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead means that our faith is ananya, or one-pointed. It is not distributed anywhere else. And a very good example of this, Lord Kapila himself as Lord Krishna, when he came 5,000 years ago, he gives a good example of this during the Govardhan Leela pastime. In this pastime we are just studying in our Bhaktivedanta course with Keshav Prabhu. So there Lord Krishna, after the Yajnik Brahmins pastime, where he delivers the vows of the Yajnik Brahmins, he observes that in the same village, Nanda Maharaj and all the elders of Vrindavan have come down. And they are all having lots of discussions with these Brahmins, and they are all making elaborate arrangements for some sacrifice. So Lord Krishna then inquires from Nanda Maharaj that what is this that you all are doing? What sacrifice are you all performing? And is it some family tradition, or is it something which is like a local custom? Or is it something which has been prescribed by the Shastras? So Lord Krishna was only 7 years old at that time, and he's speaking these big words. And he feels that Nanda Maharaj may just reject his plea of getting this information from him. So he actually then reiterates the point. He tells Nanda Maharaj that people who are saintly in nature should not actually make a distinction between family and friends and neutral people. They should give this information when it has been sought. So when Nanda Maharaj sees Lord Krishna appealing so nicely, he explains to him that we are making all these arrangements because this is a tradition which we are following since a long time. He says we are Vaishyas, and in Vaishyas usually have two or three main duties. They look after farming, that is one duty of Vaishya. One of the duties of Vaishya is cow herding, or the other duty of Vaishyas is money lending, like money making, banking, commerce, all these things. So these are some principal duties of Vaishyas which have been prescribed in the Shastras. And Nanda Maharaj's community, being Vaishyas, they were responsible for cowherding. So Nanda Maharaj explains to Krishna that since we are a cowherd community, we are very much dependent on rains. Because only when rainfall comes does ample grass grow, we can feed our cows like that, and then we will get all the milk and sell all the milk products. So who gives the rains? He says, it's Indra who is the lord of the rains, and we perform this sacrifice every year to satisfy Lord Indra so that he keeps giving profuse rainfall. And in this particular case, Krishna performs this whole leela of Govardhan pastime. And Prabhupada describes, and the Acharyas describe, that there were two or three purposes which Krishna wanted to achieve through the Govardhan leela. Now one purpose we all know, that it was actually to break Indra's pride. Because Lord Krishna knew, as the Paramatma in Indra's heart, Lord Krishna knew that Indra had become very puffed up because of all these sacrifices and all this glorification which was being offered to him, because he is the Lord of Rains, plus he is the King of Heavens, he is the King of all the demigods. So his insignificant servant, Prabhupada writes in the purport, that Krishna wanted to show mercy to his insignificant servant, Lord Indra, who was actually his devotee, but who had forgotten that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and who had started thinking that he himself, Indra himself, is the Lord and the controller of everything. So Lord Krishna wanted to break this pride of Indra. So that was one reason he performed this whole pastime. But the second very important reason he also performed this pastime, because he could not bear that his pure devotees, the Vrajvasis, were actually engaged in demigod worship. Krishna wanted to set this example for all future generations of devotees to come, that once we are a surrendered devotee of Lord Krishna, there is no need to do any other worship at all apart from worshipping Lord Krishna. That is an example Krishna wanted to set, and he uses his own pure devotees, the Brajvasis like Nanda Maharaj and all the elderly people, to show this example to us. That how when you are you're in the association of Krishna, you are worshipping Lord Krishna, there is no other need to do all these performances and sacrifices. And therefore he performed this whole pastime. So there he starts explaining to Nanda Maharaj. He starts explaining the Karma Mimamsa philosophy to Nanda Maharaj. And Prabhupada says that the Karma Mimamsa philosophy is actually nothing but covered atheism, having some belief in reincarnation. That is what is Karma Mimamsa philosophy. But Krishna wanted to establish that how Lord Indra is not in charge of everything, but it is only because of our karma, whether good karma or bad karma, that everything happens in this world. So there are elaborate purports and elaborate verses Lord Krishna says about the Karma Mimamsa philosophy, because he wanted to refute this demigod worship which his devotees were doing. So we won't get into that, but the whole lesson that we learn from this is that when devotees need to develop this unflinching faith in Krishna, they have to. Krishna asks for full surrender. He asks them to give up all these other, you know, ways where their attention or where their devotion is distributed. He did not want that to happen. And therefore he established this whole Govardhan Leela pastime, that worship Govardhan, who is non-different than me, so that your attention is not diverted towards Indra. And he promises such surrender devotees who go beyond all these things and who absolutely surrender to Krishna, that he will then deliver them. But devotees are not interested in that. In further, in the purport, Prabhupada explains that devotees are actually not interested in going beyond the world of birth and death. What is a devotee's main interest? Prabhupada quotes prayers also by different acharyas. He says that a devotee actually prays that let me become an ant or let me become a dog. I don't care, Krishna, what you do with me in my next lifetime, but just ensure that I am in the association of devotees. If I become an ant, I am in the house of a devotee so that I get to hear Krishna Katha, I get to hear some Kirtan and I get to have some Mahaprasad which those devotees would have left. So devotees actually don't care about this. And Lord Krishna, He is ready to award this liberation to devotees. So in the Nectar of Devotion it is described that bhakti is very sudurlabham. What is the meaning of sudurlabham? Sudurlabham means it is very rarely achieved. So Krishna awards liberation actually very easily. Like He is promising over here, I will take you beyond the world of birth and death. He is ready to award liberation, but He does not give His pure bhakti very easily to devotees. And why He doesn't do that? Prabhupada explains in the Nectar of Devotion that Krishna does not award pure bhakti very easily. He in fact keeps testing His devotees, like He did with the Vrajavasis for the Govardhan Leela pastime. So He tests His devotees, and only when He sees that these devotees have come to that level where they can earn His trust, they have become completely trustworthy, they have given up all other processes and they have accepted Krishna as their only Lord and Master, it is only at that time that He awards pure devotional service to these devotees. And when He awards this, He actually becomes conquered by the devotee. He completely comes under the control of the devotee, and therefore He is reluctant to award it. Because imagine that you are completely under the control of someone. Not that devotees want to control Krishna. Devotees' desire is always to serve Krishna. But because Krishna has, you know, they have rendered this unflinching devotional service to Krishna, Krishna becomes under their control. The Ajita, the unconquerable, becomes Jita, conquered by His devotees. And again in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam it is described that when Krishna like this becomes conquered by His devotees, He actually likes to be defeated by His devotees. He succumbs to their will and desire. And this is very evident in many pastimes of Lord Krishna with His different pure devotees. So we see the first example of His succumbing to the will of His devotees and taking pleasure in becoming defeated by His devotees and being conquered by them is in His dealings with the cowherd boys. So during, before the pastime of Pralambasura, when Lord Balaram kills the demon Pralambasura, Lord Krishna and all His cowherd friends have a game. And they used to have many such games, wrestling matches, you know, rope pulling matches, playing tag, all these things. And they used to sometimes have this condition that whichever team defeats the other team, they have to, the team who lost should carry the winning team on their shoulders. So as part of that, they played this game and Lord Krishna's team lost and Balaram's team won. So Sridhama was in Lord Balaram's team and then he was carried by Lord Krishna on his shoulders. And at that time Prabhupada explains that look at Lord Krishna. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is full of six opulences. There is nobody more powerful than Lord Krishna in this world. But yet He has become defeated by His cowherd friends. And it is not that He is acting. Okay, let me do this acting. Like Prabhupada gives the example of the love between a father and a son. So the father has so much strength. When you compare him to a little child, the father has lots of strength. If the father wants, he can actually crush the son in 2 minutes with his strength. But the father sometimes, like if they are having like a fighting, mock fighting, the father actually pretends to fall down when the son strikes the father. And he says, oh, I've lost. And the son takes great pleasure. And he goes and announces to everybody, look, I defeated my father today. Now, was that a true thing? Obviously, the father has much, much more strength than the son. But here, this particular pastime which the father enacts, it gives pleasure to the son as well as to the father. Both of them are pleased in this. The son is pleased that I defeated my father and the father is pleased that my son is happy. So in the same way, Lord Krishna also does this, but He is not pretending like the father. Because of the potency of Yog Maya, Lord Krishna actually thinks that He is weaker than these people and He has become defeated by His cowherd friends. So even when He lifted Govardhan Hill, all His cowherd friends were telling Him that Krishna, you serve for some time, you give the Govardhan Hill, your hand will pain, you give it to Sridhama. Anyway, he defeats you in wrestling matches. So he is stronger than you, he will be able to carry Govardhan Hill for you for some time. So this is how the dealings are between Krishna and His devotees, completely under the control. And actually Krishna likes to be defeated and conquered by his devotees. And we see this in his dealings with even the Pandavas. The Pandavas are pure devotees of the Lord. But what all Krishna did, just conquered by the love of the Pandavas, he was ready to become Parthasarathi, the chariot driver of Arjuna. Now chariot driving, actually it's a chariot driver's position is not very great. It's a very menial service to become a chariot driver of someone. Because as part of chariot driver duties, they don't only drive the chariot, and Arjuna used to kick the way Kshatriyas indicate to chariot drivers, which way they want the chariot to go is by kicking. So if they kick on the left hand side, that means the chariot has to go towards the right, or if they kick on the right, the chariot has to go towards the left. This is how indication is given to the chariot driver, because obviously the Kshatriya's hands are full of weapons, so he won't be able to touch or tap or something. So he can just show with his leg. So Krishna was ready to accept these kicks from Arjuna as part of his chariot driving duties. And as part of being a Parthasarathi or a chariot driver, the chariot driver also has to look after the horses. So imagine he has to clean up the horses, the stool and all that. If the horses have been tired fighting in the battlefield the whole day, he has to take, Krishna used to take the horses to feed water, grass, freshen up the horses, even brush them. So all these duties Lord Krishna used to perform just out of love for Arjuna. Otherwise he need not have done these duties. Even when we see Yudhishthir Maharaj, like after the whole Mahabharata war was over, Lord Krishna was leaving Hastinapur to go back to Dwarka. Because his mission had been accomplished, Yudhishthir Maharaj had been made the emperor of the world. So when he was leaving, all the ladies of Hastinapur come and they are all crying out of separation, because Lord Krishna had stayed there for so many months and they had become so used to the association of Lord Krishna. So they were all crying, including Kunti Maharani. And then the famous prayers of Kunti Maharani are there. But they all wanted Krishna to stay a little more. But you know, Yudhishthir Maharaj, realizing that all the ladies of Vrindavan, of Hastinapur, want him to stay a little more, he comes there and he just puts one simple request to Krishna, that Krishna, can you extend your stay by a few more days and then go back to Dwarka? And listening to this simple plea of Yudhishthir Maharaj, Lord Krishna agrees to extend his stay, and he actually stays back for a few more days. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that what made this phenomenon happen. Lord Krishna was set upon going back to Dwarka, but it is only the love of Yudhishthir Maharaj who conquered Lord Krishna, and then he agreed to extend his stay. So in the same way, this Ajita or this unconquerable Lord loves to be get conquered by his devotees, by these devotees who show unflinching faith in him, by these devotees who completely surrender themselves to him. And then Krishna sells him out to these devotees. And we see even in Vrindavan, all the elderly gopis, Krishna was absolutely under the control of these gopis. In fact, they used to clap when Krishna was a little boy. They used to clap their hands and they used to tell Krishna, Krishna, now dance. We will sing and clap and you dance for us. And if you dance nicely, we will give you some sweetmeats. We'll give you some sweets, we'll give you some butter. And Krishna used to get so enamored by all this that he used to dance. You know, actually dancing to the tune of the gopis. Such a small child, he's the supreme personality of Godhead. But he's right now in Vrindavan dancing on the clapping of the gopis. This is how surrendered devotees can capture Lord Krishna. They can conquer Lord Krishna in their hearts and they can make Krishna do whatever they want. And today we see the disappearance day of one such great Vaishnava. His name is Narottam Das Thakur. And he's an example for all of us, especially for Gaudiya Vaishnavas to follow, who had unflinching faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, especially in his form as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared 500 years ago on this earth. So we will spend the remainder of the class speaking a little bit about Narottam Das Thakur and glorifying his position. Especially for Gaudiya Vaishnavas, it is very important to understand the teachings and the life of Narottam Das Thakur. So Narottam Das Thakur has been glorified in many great literatures which have been written by great personalities like Narahari Chakravarti and many such prominent Vaishnavas. He has been glorified in literatures like Bhakti Ratnakar, Prema Vilas, Narottam Vilas. All these literatures have been specially written to glorify Narottam Das Thakur's position. So we see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advented 500 years ago. And the purpose of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's advent was mainly to distribute the Yuga Dharma, the chanting of the holy names of Krishna, and to distribute bhakti to everyone in the mood of Vrindavan, especially the love which Radharani had for Krishna. So So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to experience that love as well as to distribute that love freely to one and all without looking at the qualifications. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so busy in distributing this love, and he therefore did not personally write many literatures describing Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy or describing the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. The only written verses which are there of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which he personally narrated, is the Sikshashtakam. That's all. He did not write any other literatures, he did not write any other philosophy or any other books. And he left that work to his very intimate disciples and followers, who were the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. So he entrusted that responsibility to the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, headed by Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami. And the six Goswamis of Vrindavan carried out this order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very earnestly. So they wrote volumes and volumes of literature glorifying Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, glorifying Lord Krishna, glorifying the process of devotional service. And he also gave them the responsibility of excavating, of going and settling down in Vrindavan and excavating the holy places where Lord Krishna had performed his pastimes. So Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami, along with all the other Goswamis, actually were settled in Vrindavan, and they were doing this responsibility, performing this task which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had given them, of discovering all the holy places, the pastime places of Lord Krishna, and of writing great literatures. So these six Goswamis, because they had been entrusted with this responsibility, they did not travel much out of Vrindavan. Most of their preaching, most of their activities were within Vrindavan Dham. Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami used to go out little bit, but not extensively traveling to preach the glories of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu throughout India. But then this responsibility was carried out by the second layer of Vaishnavas, Gaudiya Vaishnavas who came in. And there were three great personalities who carried on the responsibility of spreading Gaudiya Vaishnavas in throughout the subcontinent of India. And these three great personalities were Srinivas Acharya, Shyamanand Pandit and Narottam Das Thakur. They were great friends, they were great Gaudiya Vaishnavas, and they had become like a group. And they had taken up the responsibility to spread Gaudiya Vaishnavism throughout the world, throughout India, throughout the subcontinent of India. In fact, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had predicted the advent of Narottam Das Thakur. So once when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was on the way to Ramakeli, along with all his associates, they were passing by Kheturi Gram, and there is the river Padma which flows there. So this river Padma is now, in present day India, it is on the border of India and Bangladesh. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was passing through there, and they all took their bath in that river. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started dancing ecstatically, and tears were flowing from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's eyes. And he was crying out in great ecstasy, Narottam, Narottam, Narottam. So all the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who were present there, they were a little surprised that who is this Narottam person, because Narottam Das Thakur had not even appeared in the world at that time. So they asked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that who is this personality whom you are talking about, who is this Narottam? And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu reveals to them, he says that in a few years time there is a great Acharya, there is a great Vaishnava who will take birth in Kheturi Gram, which is not far from here, and his name will be Narottam Das. And he is a great Vaishnava, and he will actually spread the glories of Gaudiya Vaishnavism throughout the subcontinent of India. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that what I'm going to do is, I'm going to take all the love of my heart and I'm going to put it in a pot and I'm going to put it in this river. And then when Narottam Das Thakur comes and takes bath in this river, he will be imbued with this love from my own heart which I'm leaving in this river I'm going. So the devotees were astonished at the mercy which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was ready to give for Narottam Das Thakur, to leave behind and go for Narottam Das Thakur. Love from his own heart being left behind in the river for Narottam Das Thakur to imbibe. So the river Padma appears in front of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In her personified form she appears, and she asks Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, she says that how will I recognize who is this Narottam Das Thakur? How will I recognize whom to give this pot of love that you are leaving behind and going? And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains to the river Padma. He says that one day when a personality comes and takes bath, because of no reason your entire bank overflows. You start overflowing and overflowing. At that time you should realize that this is the personality who is Narottam Das Thakur, and this is the personality whom you should give this love of Godhead which I am leaving behind in this river and going. So Narottam Das Thakur, after a few years, took birth in the village of Kheturi. His father's name was Raja Krishnananda Datta. He was the zamindar of Gopalpur area. So he was the king. Narottam Das Thakur was born in a very rich family. And his mother's name was Narayani Dasi. So Narottam Das Thakur's beginnings can actually be compared to the beginnings of Raghunath Das Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami also, as most of us know, he was born in a very rich aristocratic family. And the same was the case of Narottam Das Thakur. Narottam Das Thakur was absolutely unattached, even though he was born in this great king-like opulence and so much wealth they had, but he was absolutely unattached from his childhood to any wealth, to any opulences, to any worldly matters. And this was a great concern for his father. His father used to think that, how am I going to actually make him the zamindar? He has to take up, he is the heir to my entire kingdom. How is he going to take up all this if he is showing so much detachment from the world? Because, you know, becoming a zamindar or becoming a king, you have to have that passion in you to be able to look after the kingdom. But Narottam Das Thakur was absolutely indifferent to all these things. And then once Narottam Das Thakur, when he was a young child, young boy, Lord Nityananda appeared in his dream. And Lord Nityananda instructed Narottam Das Thakur that go and take bath in the Padma River. So listening to this dream, and Narottam Das Thakur had already heard the glories of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. So he goes to that river, to Padma River, and he takes bath in the river. And as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had predicted, the entire Padma River started overflowing when Narottam Das Thakur took bath. So Padma River realized that this is the personality whom Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had predicted, whose advent Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had predicted. And this is the personality to whom I have to give love. So as soon as Narottam Das Thakur imbibed that love which Padma River gave him, there was a complete transformation which happens in Narottam Das Thakur. First of all, his physical appearance changes. So he was actually a dark complexion child when he was born. But when he comes out of the river, his complexion had become golden, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Mm-hmm. That is the first transformation which happens in the physical appearance of Narottam Das Thakur. And as soon as he comes out of the river, because obviously he was imbued with the love which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had left behind from his own heart, he starts manifesting ecstatic symptoms. He starts dancing, he starts, all the eight Ashtasatvika bhavas were coming on his body, his hair was standing on end, tears were flowing from his eyes. And when his father saw all this, they were astonished when his parents saw all this. And they realized that, you know, this boy was already detached, but now he's showing more and more symptoms of the love of Godhead. So somehow or the other, they were trying to keep him captured within the house, because they were thinking he's going to leave house and home and go away soon. And that, you know, their fear came true. One day Narottam Das Thakur decided that I cannot stay in this family life anymore. And he escaped, just as we know how Raghunath Das Goswami escaped from his parents. So he escaped and he walked all the way from Kheturi Gram and he came to Mathura. And when he came to Mathura, there was an elderly Brahmin who saw, and Narottam Das Thakur was very young. He was a young boy at that time. So he gives shelter to Narottam Das Thakur in his house. And at that time he tells Narottam Das Thakur, Narottam Das Thakur tells him that I have come here because I have heard so much glories of Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda. I have heard so much glories of his followers, the six Goswamis. So I have come here hoping to get association of these great personalities. And at that time the elderly Brahmin reveals to Narottam Das Thakur that most of these personalities whom you are talking about have already left the world and gone away. And hearing this, Narottam Das Thakur's heart was shattered. So he almost falls down unconscious, because the personalities, Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, all these personalities he had actually come to take association from, and they had all left. So while he was unconscious, these same personalities whom he was lamenting for, they appear in his dream. And they tell him that don't lament, we are all going to be always there with you. Although our physical presence is not there, but we are all going to be always there with you. You now proceed to Vrindavan and you take association of Jiva Goswami. So Jiva Goswami was still present in Vrindavan at that time. And he had been made the undisputed leader of Gaudiya Vaishnavism at that time. So they tell him, go and take association of Jiva Goswami, go and take shelter of Lokanath Goswami. They will all be there to actually give you association and to, you know, take you under their care. And while this conversation was going on between Narottam Das Thakur and these personalities who had departed, the elderly Brahmana could actually hear these conversations. So what it must have been such a magnificent scene for the elderly Brahmana that he is able to see the dream, witness the dream which Narottam Das Thakur is having and the conversation which he is having in his dream with these great personalities. So hearing this, Narottam Das Thakur's heart becomes a little pacified. And the next day he actually proceeds towards Vrindavan. And there the meeting of Narottam Das Thakur with Jiva Goswami is described. That how Jiva Goswami rushes. Because just as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had predicted the advent of Narottam Das Thakur, all these personalities were aware that Narottam Das Thakur is going to come soon to Vrindavan. And they knew how what an elevated Vaishnava Narottam Das Thakur was. So they all rush, Jiva Goswami rushes, even Lokanath Goswami rushes, and they all embrace Narottam Das Thakur and they welcome him in Vrindavan and they take him under their care. So he starts living with Jiva Goswami and he starts taking association of Jiva Goswami. And when he associates with all these great personalities, he decides to take shelter and initiation from Lokanath Goswami. So Narhari Chakravarti describes in the Bhakti Ratnakar and in the Narottam Vilas, how he takes initiation, the pastime between Lokanath Goswami and Narottam Das Thakur. So Narottam Das Thakur's heart was set on Lokanath Goswami, that this is my spiritual master and I want to take initiation from him. And what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had done, before Narottam Das Thakur had come to Vrindavan, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had come in a dream to Lokanath Goswami. And he had instructed him that this great personality, this great Gaudiya Vaishnava, Narottam Das is going to come. You please give him initiation and take him under your care. So Lokanath Goswami was expecting that Narottam Das Thakur will approach him. But Lokanath Goswami, it is described that he was a Bhajananandi. He was not a Goshtiyanandi saint. So he did not want to have any disciples. He did not want, he just wanted to do Nirjan Bhajan himself. So when Narottam Das Thakur approaches Lokanath Goswami, Lokanath Goswami tells him that you are such an elevated Vaishnava. You already have, you know, have personal association of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityanand Prabhu. They all come in your dreams. They give you instructions. What is the use of taking initiation from a lowly person like me? So in his humility, Lokanath Goswami refused to give him initiation. But Narottam Das Thakur insisted. So he tells him that, okay, a disciple who has to take initiation first has to become very strong in his chanting. So for 1 year, I want you to chant very fervently the holy names of the Lord and then we will consider whether to give you initiation. So not that Narottam Das Thakur was not chanting nicely. He was already an elevated Vaishnava. His chanting was very powerful. But following the instructions of his guru, he then takes up the process of chanting very seriously. So for 1 year, he chants very nicely. But after 1 year, he sees that there is no indication from Lokanath Goswami that he is going to give him initiation. So Narottam Das Thakur still, he was not deterred by this. Like, you know, in nowadays, we become very despondent when our Guru Maharaj is taking a long time to give initiation. Oh, why isn't he initiating me? Am I not qualified? But the mood was completely opposite. Narottam Das Thakur kept feeling that I am unqualified anyway. That is why my Guru is not giving me initiation. So Narottam Das Thakur used to render lots of menial services to Lokanath Goswami. Imagine, he's a prince actually. He's the son of a wealthy zamindar. But what he used to do is, when Lokanath Goswami used to go in the morning, early morning, to answer nature's calls, like to pass ablutions and, you know, do all the basic necessities. After he used to answer nature's call, he used to go to take bath in the river. At that time, Narottam Das Thakur would come and clean up that whole area with his own hands. So imagine cleaning up the stool and urine of your spiritual master. With his own hands, he used to clean up. And every time Lokanath Goswami would come the next day to again answer nature's calls, he used to see that that area is so clean. So nice, he has kept very nice. He used to sprinkle nice water and all that and keep it very clean and fresh for his Guru Maharaj to use next day. And Lokanath Goswami used to feel very aggrieved in his heart. He used to feel that who is doing this lowly service for me? I don't think this is right that somebody does such type of service for me. But he could not understand. So after many days, Lokanath Goswami decides that now I'm going to hide in the bushes and I'm going to discover who is doing this service for me. So then Lokanath Goswami one day comes very early in the morning and he hides behind the bushes. And he sees that Narottam Das Thakur has come over there and it is Narottam Das Thakur who is cleaning this whole area up. So at that time Lokanath Goswami's heart melts and then he rushes to Narottam Das Thakur and he says, he embraces him and he says that you are the son of a zamindar, you are such a wealthy person. Why are you doing this lowly service for me? I don't deserve all this. But Narottam Das Thakur just falls at his feet and he tells him that the only desire I have is that you give me initiation. But again, Lokanath Goswami in his humility never felt qualified enough to become the guru of Narottam Das Thakur. So he still doesn't initiate him. And after some time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu again appears in Lokanath Goswami's dream. And this time Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chastises Lokanath Goswami. He says that, did I not tell you in your first dream that you should give initiation to Narottam Das Thakur? Why are you delaying it so much? I am ordaining you to give him initiation and you are still not giving him initiation. So this time Lokanath Goswami realizes that yes, I will have to follow the instructions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then he gives Narottam Das Thakur initiation. So he not only gives him first initiation, he also gives him second initiation. And he also reveals Narottam Das Thakur's eternal position in the spiritual world to him. So Narottam Das Thakur's eternal swarup in the spiritual world is that he is Champaka Manjari. And acharyas explained to us, they warn us that we should not imitate in these pastimes. We should not try to understand what my Siddha Swarup is or what my eternal position or my eternal service in the spiritual world is. These are all elevated personalities. So Lokanath Goswami, looking at the qualification of Narottam Das Thakur, reveals that you are Champaka Manjari and he reveals his service also to him. What your service will be in the spiritual world. So it is described that the service of Narottam Das Thakur was to boil milk for Krishna. So that the Champaka Sakhi would then make sweets for Lord Krishna. So that is how the hierarchy was. And he used to serve Rupa Manjari and that way the service used to reach Radharani and Lord Krishna. So one day Srila Prabhupada was asked by one of his disciples, like, you know, how we should not imitate. But one of the disciples asked Srila Prabhupada. He said, Prabhupada, can you reveal my eternal position to me? And in ISKCON especially, in, you know, nowadays in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, especially Prabhupada was very heavy against Sahajiyas. So there is a sect of people in Vrindavan who are called as Sahajiyas. And Sahajiyas means these people actually try to imitate all these great Vaishnavas who knew what their eternal relationship with Krishna was in the spiritual world. And they imitate these pastimes. So they think, these Sahajiyas think that, oh, and there are Sahajiya gurus also who cheaply tell these people that you are a peacock in the spiritual world, you are this gopi, that gopi, like that. And these Sahajiyas then imitate and they try to imbibe all those services in this material world while they are in this body. So sometimes they dress up as a peacock because they think they are a peacock in the spiritual world. And even if it's a man and, you know, his Sahajiya guru has told him that you are a gopi, so they will dress like a woman even though they are in a man's body. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and following in his footsteps even Prabhupada, they both were very heavy against Sahajiyaism. They used to speak out, you know, very boldly against this, that this is a bogus philosophy, Sahajiya philosophy, and it should be banned completely. So in ISKCON we don't see this prevalent, that your guru will reveal your eternal position to you. So in the same way, when this disciple goes and asks Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada says that you keep chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra very nicely, keep rendering your devotional service nicely, and in due course of time, it will be revealed to you what your eternal position is in the spiritual world. Right now, don't worry at all about what your eternal position is. And we see that also. If we see, all our acharyas explain that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to tell us that we are Das, Das, Dasanudas. So our eternal position in the spiritual world is that we are servants. That is what we have to remember. We are the servant of the servant of the servant. And that mood we have to imbibe even in our devotional service over here. How to become the servant of the servant of the servant. And that will be the perfection of our spiritual life. So, but Narottam Das Thakur, because he was qualified, his guru actually reveals his eternal position to him. And Narottam Das Thakur then starts rendering, continues rendering his menial services. And Lokanath Goswami instructs Narottam Das Thakur that although I have given you Diksha, I have initiated you, but you now go and study under Jiva Goswami. Go and study, because Jiva Goswami, as I mentioned, was the undisputed leader. He was, in fact, even now it is mentioned that he is one of the greatest scholars of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. There is no other person who has been as scholarly as Jiva Goswami was. So Lokanath Goswami sends Narottam Das Thakur over there. And there were two other personalities who come to that ashram to study under Jiva Goswami, like we mentioned before. One was Shyamanand Pandit and the second one was Srinivas Acharya. So all the three personalities had been initiated by different gurus. Diksha was given by different gurus. Srinivas Acharya had been initiated by Gopal Bhatta Goswami and Shyamanand Pandit had been initiated by Hriday Chaitanya Goswami. But all these different spiritual masters give them instructions that go and study under Jiva Goswami. So they study, they render services to Jiva Goswami and they study the scriptures under Jiva Goswami. And Jiva Goswami was so pleased with the way these three people are studying the scriptures, that one day in a big assembly of Vaishnavas, he calls these three personalities and he bestows them with very eminent titles. So to Srinivas, he gives the title of Acharya. He says, because you have studied the scriptures so nicely, from today onwards your name will be Srinivas Acharya. To Narottam Das Thakur, he gives the title of Mahashay. And he says, now you will be called as Narottam Das Thakur Mahashay. And to Shyamanand, Shyamanand's actual name was Dukhi Krishnadas. That is what his Guru Maharaj had initiated him as. And there is a whole pastime between Dukhi Krishnadas and Radharani, and how Shyamanand got, Dukhi Krishnadas got the name of Shyamanand. So we will not go into that pastime now. But Jiva Goswami tells him that your name from now onwards will be Shyamanand Pandit. So he was given the title of Pandit. One was given the title Acharya, one was given the title of Mahashay, and the third one was given the title of Pandit. And then Jiva Goswami instructs them. He says that Gaudiya Vaishnavism has just stayed confined to Vrindavan. It has not spread outside of Vrindavan. So what I want you three to do is make a party, take all the literatures that all the Goswamis have written, and go and spread the glories of Gaudiya Vaishnavism throughout India. And he arranges for a very rich man to donate a huge bullock cart driven by four bullocks. The bullock cart was loaded with all the Gaudiya Vaishnava literatures. And then he tells these three to go and start distributing. So that was, Prabhupada says that that was the first book distribution party, which went out on book distribution. So they go out and they start preaching. Whichever village they travel through, they start preaching the glories of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. They start distributing all these literatures. And then there's a whole pastime of how this literature gets stolen by, you know, a very lowly king. A dacoit king steals all this literature. And Srinivas Acharya stays back. He tells Narottam Das Thakur and Shyamanand Pandit that you two proceed. I will stay back to retrieve this literature from the dacoit king. So Narottam Das Thakur then proceeds and comes to Kheturi Gram, to his own village. And all the villagers were so happy to receive Narottam Das Thakur back after such a long time. And seeing that he has become such a great Acharya, such a great Gaudiya Vaishnava. And there Narottam Das Thakur stays there. He preaches the glories. His father had already passed away, and his uncle's son had become the higher, because Narottam Das Thakur. His cousin brother had become the king. But Narottam Das Thakur's preaching was so strong that his cousin brother also became a disciple of Narottam Das Thakur. And he was ready to give sponsorship for whatever festivals Narottam Das Thakur wanted to organize. So Narottam Das Thakur gathers all the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, and on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance day, he organizes a huge festival, which is called as the Kheturi Festival. It is very famous. That was the first Gaur Purnima which was celebrated by Narottam Das Thakur. And great personalities like Janva Mata, even Shyamanand Pandit comes from Orissa. Shyamanand Pandit was preaching in Orissa. So he also comes, Srinivas Acharya joins, and they have this great festival glorifying Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance. And that time it is mentioned that because Narottam Das Thakur was such a nice Vaishnava, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Nityananda, all the Goswamis who had already departed, they all come, they all manifest there, and they dance ecstatically in the kirtan which was being sung by Narottam Das Thakur. So this is the festival that Narottam Das Thakur organizes, and then Narottam Das Thakur initiates so many disciples. He had many, many famous disciples, one of which was Ganga Narayan Chakravarti. He was one of his very famous disciples. And because time is short, we will not describe more pastimes, but we'll just describe the disappearance pastime of Narottam Das Thakur. So Narottam Das Thakur was very bold in his preaching, just as Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was, and even our own Srila Prabhupada was. So even though Narottam Das Thakur himself, first of all, was a non-Brahmin, he was not born in a Brahmin family, but because he had been initiated like this by his Guru Maharaj, he was boldly giving initiation to all non-Brahmins also. And some of the castes, you know, casteism was very strongly prevalent at that time. So some of the caste Goswamis and the caste Brahmins were very upset with Narottam Das Thakur. And they had lots of resentment for him, that how is he initiating non-Brahmins like this into Brahminical culture, Brahmin initiation. So Narottam Das Thakur had initiated so many people, and then he realizes that now I have to close down my pastimes. So he tells Ganga Narayan Chakravarti that now I'm going to wind up my pastimes. Can you build a funeral pyre for me? And I'm now going to lie down it, and I'm going to give up my body. So they very reluctantly, following the orders of their Guru Maharaj, they make a funeral pyre. And Narottam Das Thakur in the meantime has gone into internal samadhi. into internal meditation. So for 3 days he was absolutely still. They had made the funeral pyre, but he had gone into his own internal samadhi. And at that time, all the Brahmins, all these caste Brahmins who were against Narottam Das Thakur, they all gather there and they start denouncing. They start saying very derogatory things about Narottam Das Thakur, which hurt the heart of his disciples. They start saying that, look at him. Because he's a non-Brahmin, he is going to die just like that. He is not even going to have a proper funeral, which is actually what, you know, Brahmin should deserve. And because he did all these things, he himself is non-Brahmin and he gave Brahmin initiation to non-Brahmins, he is not even having a good death. So they started saying all these derogatory things about Narottam Das Thakur. And his disciple actually goes and begs. They beg, like, you know, he was in Samadhi, but they beg. They say that, look at all these Brahmins who are speaking all these derogatory remarks about you. Please do something, Guru Maharaj. So then Narottam Das Thakur opens his eyes. And in front of the eyes of all these caste Brahmins, a beautiful golden aura comes upon Narottam Das Thakur. And there is a golden thread which self-manifests itself on Narottam Das Thakur's body. And they say that, oh, this Brahmin thread has come. And this makes all the caste Brahmins so ashamed of themselves, because a self-manifested Brahmin thread has come on Narottam Das Thakur's body. And they all fall at the feet of Narottam Das Thakur and they beg forgiveness from him. So after that, Narottam Das Thakur then postpones his leaving for the world for some more time. And then one day he has travelled to the Ganga. So there are different versions of how he left this world, but one of the main important versions which our Acharyas tell is that he had gone to the Ganga with some of his prominent disciples. And then he tells his disciples that now the time has come for me to leave my body. So he goes into the Ganga and he tells Ganga Narayan Chakravarti and other disciples that now you'll start pouring this Ganga water on me. So they start pouring Ganga water on him and a very astounding phenomenon happens. While they are pouring Ganga water on Narottam Das Thakur, his body starts melting. So the whole body of Narottam Das Thakur melts and it's becoming milk and it is merging into the Ganga. And when Ganga Narayan Chakravarti saw, for some time they couldn't realize that, you know, such an outstanding phenomenon is happening. But Ganga Narayan Chakravarti then gathers his senses and he starts collecting, because he realizes this is my Guru Maharaj's transcendental body which is becoming milk. So he immediately starts collecting the milk which has been gathered by the melting of Narottam Das Thakur's body. And he keeps that milk and then they give samadhi to that milk. So Narottam Das Thakur had a very unusual disappearance from this world. And his samadhi then, I think Ganga Narayan Chakravarti makes a samadhi in Kheturi Gram, somewhere in his house, near his house there is the samadhi where this pot of milk has been kept. But he also has one more samadhi in Radha Gokulananda temple. So if we visit Vrindavan and we go to Radha Gokulananda temple, Narottam Das Thakur samadhi is over there also. And while Narottam Das Thakur was present in this world, he wrote many great literatures. He wrote the famous book called Prarthana and he also wrote the famous book called Prema Bhakti Chandrika. And mainly Narottam Das Thakur is known, especially to Gaudiya Vaishnavas, for all the beautiful bhajans that Narottam Das Thakur wrote. Like Jiya Nilo Prema Deya, Gauranga Boli Deha Ve, there are many, many bhajans. So apart from Bhakti Vinod Thakur, whose bhajans we prominently sing in ISKCON, we also sing many bhajans of Narottam Das Thakur also in ISKCON. And many, many bhajans, many literatures he has written. Prarthana book is very famous, which gives the descriptions of the highest form of bhakti between Radha and Krishna. So these are some of the glories of Narottam Das Thakur, and we'll end the class here because it's already 9 o'clock. But if anybody has any questions, comments or corrections.
Thank you very much for giving such a nice description. One more story is that he went barefooted, right, from Kheturi to Vrindavan, 300 kilometers without shoes or anything, barefooted, all alone. This is very significant.
Thank you.
Also, he gave initiation to two boys. They were taking the dead body of the calf and the meat, and they gave it to pure book. So, whatever, wherever he went, Rai Mahaprabhu, whomsoever he met, he just made them pure book. This is past tense.
Any other questions?
Why you can't serve demigods, thinking about, because
they are the server, like they are serving Krishna.
So demigod worship, what Lord Krishna denounces demigod worship, even in the Bhagavad Gita, I think in the 7th chapter, there are some verses where Lord Krishna talks about demigod worship. So he says that people with less intelligence actually worship the demigods. And he also says that even if somebody is worshipping the demigod, that faith has been given by me only to worship the demigods. So in Bhakti Prabhuji, everything is about the motivation or what is the intention. So when we see demigod worship and the type of demigod worship which Lord Krishna talks against or he denounces is the demigod worship where the demigods are considered to be the supreme. Or Lord Krishna is considered equal to the demigods. That is what is being denounced. When he talks about unflinching devotion, he is talking about not doing demigod worship thinking that they are the supreme. So for example, in the Govardhan Leela pastime, Lord Krishna was telling them not to worship Indra because first of all, Indra had started thinking he is the supreme. And secondly, because when the Vrajvasis are already in association of Lord Krishna, he wanted them to have unflinching devotion unto him. So the motivation is very important. Now many devotees have, you know, some devotees have Lord Shiva also on their altar. So if we are worshipping Lord Shiva thinking that he is the greatest Vaishnava and Lord Shiva actually gives you control over the mind and he gives you control over senses especially because Lord Shiva is such a renounced person. He is the husband of the mother Parvati who is the controller of the universe but still he himself is just wearing a tiger skin and he is sitting and meditating. So if we worship Lord Shiva in that mood or in that consciousness that just as you are such a great devotee of Lord Krishna, please grant me bhakti unto him, then there is nothing wrong. However, in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, I think where Krishna shows his universal form to Arjuna. At that time, Prabhupada writes in his purports and Arjuna tells Krishna, he sees the universal form and Krishna shows him that how all these great warriors like Bhishma, everyone are being swallowed by him. And at that time Arjuna becomes very bewildered looking at this universal form. Because Arjuna's relationship with Krishna is one of Sakhyam. He is a friend of Lord Krishna. So he did not like to see this form of Lord Krishna. So he requests Lord Krishna that can you please withdraw this form? I don't want to see you in this form. So then Lord Krishna withdraws his form and he comes back to his four-handed form and then his two-handed form. And Prabhupada writes in the purport, Prabhupada says that the devotees of Lord Krishna like to have one-pointed devotion. So they are not even attracted to even any other Vishnu form of Lord Krishna. They are attracted only to the Shyam Sundar form of Lord Krishna, the two-handed form of Lord Krishna who is playing the flute. So demigod worship in the right mood, yes, is, you know, as you said, they are the servants of Lord Krishna. But whether we are doing the demigod worship in the right mood, that is the first question. And when you start worshipping the demigods, it can take us away. For example, Ashtanga Yoga. When Ashtanga Yogis do this, so much austerities and they perform Ashtanga Yoga, they actually are given so many siddhis. So the goal of Ashtanga Yoga is actually to realize Paramatma. But because Ashtanga Yoga gives you all these siddhis, like, you know, they become lighter than the lighters, they can get an object which is far away close to them. Sometimes these Ashtanga Yogis get diverted from the goal. The original goal was to achieve Lord Krishna. They get diverted and then just they become so enamored by all these siddhis, which were a byproduct of, you know, doing Ashtanga Yoga, that they forget the real goal of achieving Paramatma realization. And that is what is the risk that is there when you do demigod worship. Because demigods will grant you maybe, you know, some boons, they may give you some riches and all that, and that can divert you away. But when you worship Lord Krishna directly, then Lord Krishna knows what is the right thing to give you. So for demigod worship, it is actually described like it is, you know, a shopkeeper. It's the difference between a shopkeeper and a father. So if a young child, let's say Krishna goes to a shopkeeper and he gives him money and he says, can I have this sweet or something like that? The shopkeeper is bound to sell the sweet to him because he is giving him the money for it. But if the same, you know, he goes to his father and father knows that, oh, his teeth are getting spoiled, he should not be eating sweets. So then even if he gives the money, will the father give him the sweets? He won't. So Krishna exactly knows what is good for us and he will give us only that which will sustain us in our devotional service. So if he feels that, yes, giving someone lots of wealth and opulence will actually then enhance that devotee in his devotional service, he will grant them lots of wealth. But if he feels that, no, this devotee might become proud if I give him wealth, then he will not give him wealth. So Krishna exactly knows what to give us as our loving father, whereas that with demigod worship there is a risk of getting diverted as well, like the Ashtanga yogis get diverted. And therefore the main thing is the motivation, and second thing is you can get diverted. So then why not worship like Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, have one point of devotion to Lord Krishna.
One more thing, what you are saying is austerity. Narottamdas Thakur's austerity was so great. He was a king's son. Still, he went all the way to Vrindavan all alone, nearly 1500 kilometers without and shoes. He could afford hundreds of shoes, being a son of the king. But this is a great austerity, like Ramnathas, very close to Ramnathas.
We'll end the class here. Grantha and Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki.